From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 19th day of April, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Get an update from the state statisticians in Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa as it relates to the weekly crop progress reports. Hear again from Carl Zuloff, this time around not on monopolies, but on the economies of size as related to a farm, and we'll back that up with some information from the FBFM records and University of Illinois Extension agricultural economist Gary Schnittke. And we'll close out our time together by discussing the agricultural weather forecast, of course. Today, Don Day will join us from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today settled at $8.03 a bushel, down 9 1/4. July at $7.99 3/4, 7 1/4 lower. And December new crop down 2 3/4 at $7.47. May soybeans $17.16 1/2, a penny and 3/4 higher. July $16.91 3/4, down 1 1/2 cents. And new crop November 0.5 cent lower at $15.20 1/2 a bushel. Bean meal down $1.60. The bean oil for the day 22 cents higher at $80.21, and wheat futures for the soft red down 19 3/4 at $11.09 a bushel. The hard red at $11.76 1/4, down 12 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures at $136.57 1/2 for the day, 77 1/2 higher. Feeder cattle in the August at $171.45, down 2 1/2 cents per 100 pounds, and lean hogs at $121.32 1/2, $1.07 1/2 cents lower. Crude oil at $102.03 a barrel, down $5.58. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, now joins us to talk about what's been happening in the marketplace for the day. Hi, Wayne. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, my pleasure to be here.
Looked not that exciting today, but the ranges were, 20 or 25 cents. Corn and soybeans nearby. The deferred months a little less than that. Not as volatile as it has been, but still a lot of movement in the marketplace, I guess.
Yeah, it was a real turnaround Tuesday today, Todd. Yesterday we saw a lot of new money come flying into the market. Millions of dollars come on in, and we saw, some purchases yesterday. And these aren't your regular typical commodity funds, but it is fund money that's coming in and maybe out of different places, out of the stock market and like that. And that really pushed us on up yesterday and maybe actually put us in a little bit of an overbought condition coming into today, and that's why we're seeing a little bit of evening up, I think.
What do we think will happen overnight and in tomorrow's trade then?
Well, we've got a lot of stuff going on. The EIA, said that they lowered the world demand on crude oil and suggested that banning the Russian imports would not raise prices. So the crude being a little lower, hurts on the ethanol side of things that way as far as we're going. But, as we settled up here today, I think we'll see another probably two-sided trade tomorrow with a little bit of bias, depending on the weather forecast more than anything, especially if we'd see a little more moisture come into the weather forecast, that we'd probably see corn bounce back and be in the positive tomorrow.
Do you think that supply chain issues will begin to creep back into the marketplace given what's happening in China? I've started to see some things along those lines.
Well, let's put it this way. Half of my reading today has been about how Shanghai being shut down like that and the percentage of the world market it is and that many people not producing stuff to go back in and keep up to things, plus the shipping not happening out of there. I can't see how we won't have some more supply problems coming down the road here as we look at things. A lot of containers just aren't moving, and we're way behind, and places are starting to see certain things not on the shelf as we go out doing a little shopping.
What should farmers consider then as they're thinking about going to the field still? I don't know whether anybody in your area is really moving or not. I think to the west of us there is some things happening here, but maybe you can talk about what farmers are doing and what they should be considering as it relates to marketing, if anything.
Well, I think here, we saw some of the major market advisory firms do a little bit of sales yesterday, and I think on a little pump up here why we would, probably do another 5 or 10%. We look at December corn, over 750, why that's not a bad place to let a little bit go again. I think that, you know, we're going to see people out in the field as soon as they can be. We hope that they get their fertilizer bought and paid for at the cheaper price, but I think you're going to want to go ahead and fertilize, and I think it's going to be available. I've talked to our fertilizer dealers in our area, and I think you're going to want to put on like you would usually here, just even if it is expensive, because I think this corn crop is going to be worth quite a bit.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. A quick note here. I was supposed to be in Florida last week to watch NASA launch a crew into space on the 15th. Now that was moved back to this coming Saturday, and I'm leaving tomorrow afternoon. My apologies for not being here when you'll be in the field. However, there are some really good shows coming up. This week, you'll hear on Thursday and Friday about the carbon market. I talked with a farmer that's already participating, and a soil scientist about just what storing a ton of carbon means. Those are two really good programs. And then next week on Monday, you'll hear an interview I did with a farmer from the eastern part of Ukraine a couple of weeks ago. It's just kind of a farm boy to farm boy thing, but a stellar discussion. Plus, there's an air raid in the middle of it. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday, a lot of great stuff about the challenges of farming. So stay tuned, please. And I'm hopeful because next week is our spring pledge drive here at Illinois Public Media. You'll be ready to make a donation. You can do that now if you want at willpledge.org. But mostly, this is just a heads up. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 4% of the corn crop around the nation has been planted. The rolling five-year average is 6%. 1% of the soybeans are now in the ground. The five-year average is twice that much at 2%. 7% of the winter wheat crop has headed, and the normal is 12% on the five-year rolling average. The condition of the crop is said to be 27% good and 3% excellent this week. That compares to 29% good and 3% excellent for the previous week, and last year, 46% good and 7% excellent. Now, here are some updates from the statisticians in Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa.
This is Melissa Bondes. Snow, high winds, and continued cold conditions limited Iowa farmers to 2.8 days suitable for field work last week. Farmers have been applying anhydrous and fertilizer, spreading manure, tilling fields, and planting oats where possible while preparing to plant row crops. Topsoil moisture condition rated 7% very short, 22% short, 66% adequate, and 5% surplus. Subsoil moisture condition rated 11% very short, 33% short, 54% adequate, and 2% surplus. 29% of the expected oat crop has been planted, 8 days behind last year and 3 days behind the five-year average. Oats are beginning to emerge across the state. Pastures were still mostly dormant, although there were reports of some starting to turn green. Livestock conditions were generally good, with many new calves arriving. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Melissa Bond.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. More cool temperatures impacted Illinois last week. Temperatures averaged 49.1 degrees, nearly 3 degrees below normal. Average precipitation across Illinois was nearly 1 inch, just a little below normal for the week. Southern parts of the prairie state were much wetter than average, with double the normal rainfall totals. Central and northern areas were generally 3 to 4 tenths of an inch below normal rainfall. Only 1.3 days were suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture was rated 1% very short, 3 short, 40 adequate, and 56% surplus. On Sunday, soil temperatures ranged from the mid-30s in northern Illinois to the upper 40s in southern areas. There were scattered and limited reports of tillage, fertilizing, and some planting as well. 4% of winter wheat acres were reported as heading, compared to 5% 1 year ago and 4% for the five-year average. The condition of the wheat crop was rated 10% poor, 45% fair, 35% good, and 10% excellent. That is an improvement from the previous week. Pasture conditions also improved and were rated 12% very poor to poor, 36% fair, and 52% good to excellent. I would like to thank all the people that responded to the crop progress and condition report this week. We really appreciate your assistance in telling the story of Illinois agriculture. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Lofta, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Another week of cold, wintry conditions limited farmers to just 0.1 days suitable for field work during the week. Topsoil moisture supply is rated 2% very short, 9% short, 68% adequate, and 21% surplus. Subsoil moisture supply is rated 3% very short, 20% short, 69% adequate, and 8% surplus. Oats planted was reported at 1% complete, below the five-year average of 11% for this time of year, and well below last year's 28%. All other crops remained at 0% planted. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across parts of the Midwest. A couple of other items to make note of. There were 5.9 days suitable for field work in Kansas last week, and in Nebraska, that number was 5.6. There's a reason for that. Kansas topsoil moisture is 63% short to very short, and Nebraska, that number is 84%. You can find out more about the conditions of the crop around the planet by listening to our programs anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Last week on this program, you heard a discussion I had with Carl Zuloff, Professor Emeritus from The Ohio State University, about an article which he penned along with the FarmDoc team, including Gary Schnitke, Krista Swanson, and Nick Paulson, entitled Monopoly Pricing Power and Fertilizer. In that, they asked several questions about the fertilizer industry and whether there was monopoly power in play at this point, pricing fertilizer for users across the United States. In it, they say a small number of participating firms is not sufficient to conclude that monopoly pricing exists, and that's because there can be available substitutes, barriers to entry, technological economies of size, and other things at play. Now, when I finished that conversation up, I asked a different question of Carl Zuloff, and I think you will find this one a very interesting conversation. So, based on the conversation we just had and the barriers to entry, which normally are cost related to starting a farming, row crop farming operation or any farming operation, do economies of scale suggest that farms in the United States are too small?
Actually, I mean, for one reason, I mean, I could, Todd, to go back and the idea of studying production functions has lost currency in economics. The studies that exist in almost every industry are really old, dated, 20 years or more. Okay? The same is true for agriculture. We really do not have a good feeling for what the economies of size are and are not in row crop agriculture in particular, Todd. Now, we have reasons for believing that they're very large in livestock because we've seen such a growth in large livestock facilities. And so you would want to say this is what's going on. They know the business. They know that there's large economies of size and that they're building the livestock facilities to match those economies of size. In row crops, the studies are literally over 20 years old, which is a long time. You think about how technology has changed in the last 20 years in row crop production. But at that time, it was really debated how much economies of size really existed in agriculture. It was not in row crop agriculture. It was not, I would argue there was no clear conclusion from the academic studies that had been done. There was a tendency to find economies of size. What we found more often was there was not diseconomies of size with farms. And so the growth in the size of farms was because I could get bigger and I didn't see my cost of production going up. And so it's really the lack of diseconomies of size in row crop agriculture that matter, not the economies of size. But this is all based on studies 20 years ago, Todd. I don't know what we would find today if we did the similar studies. Now, there are purchasing economies that come into play, okay? Larger producers buying more inputs, getting bigger discounts. And that could cause the curve to go down, as well as the when we use the word economies of size, we usually are referring to production technology, okay? But there are marketing analogs to this that could be going on also, that could be driving it down. And I certainly would trust Gary and any analysis that he has done out of the FBFM records, and that would be a really good record set to use. But I would point out that there aren't a lot of farms that are that large. So you would have a small sample question.
Interestingly enough, I also asked this question of the former governor of Mato Grosso in Brazil, who at the time when I was talking to him was supposed to be the world's largest farmer, although soybean farmer, that is, although this was in, 2006 or 7 or 8, somewhere in that area. He had another farmer with him that had more hectares. And when I asked, he said that he had to break the farms up into 100,000 hectares, roughly speaking, and that the limiting factor was, for him, geography.
Yep.
And being able to move equipment.
Personally speaking, Todd, I think the bottleneck on farm size, I do not see, this is me speaking personally, and it's anecdotal evidence. The lack of diseconomies of size is really important. The fact that you don't see your cost curve going up is just as important as anything else, because that means I can expand. I can duplicate my farm. My personal experiences is the drying capacity at harvest for those who grow corn is perhaps the bottleneck on the farm. You can only dry so much so fast, okay? And that ultimately, how much can I get done over whatever the time period that I'm thinking of, let's say a month to 6 weeks, can I get everything dried down? And that can become a bottleneck.
The other thing, as I'm thinking about it, is that he said while geography was the way he split the farms up, he did not split the inputs up because there were economies of scale in purchasing for the whole of the farm.
Yep.
Despite the fact that he had to have different sets of equipment for each farm.
Yep. And one of the arguments in an academic sense here, not in the political sense, but in an academic sense, that was going on at the time, the last time that this was a topic of interest in the research areas of farm management, was the trade-off between technological economies of size, which many people at the time believed did turn up. They did become less efficient, but could you override them with marketing economies of size? And my understanding of the literature is that question was never really fully resolved. Could marketing economies completely overwhelm technological diseconomies?
Interesting. Well, I will run some of this by Gary to make sure I got the 5,000 to 7,000 right. And I'll probably use it at some time. I won't use that part today for any reason.
No.
I'll use the first part. But
I do think, Todd, for what it's worth, I do think we are going back to a period where technological economies of size, not just in agriculture, but across the country, across the U.S. industry, manufacturing sector in particular, is a topic that's going to come back onto the radar screen. And we're going to see much more interest in it than we've seen in the past. And a lot of it is because of the rise of the concern about monopoly pricing power in much of U.S. industry, including technology, Amazon, the new tech companies, Amazon, et cetera. I sense that this is coming back onto the stage of investigation.
That was Carl Zuloff, who is an extension of the interview I did with him last week related to the Farm Doc Daily article on the power of pricing for monopolies as it relates to fertilizer across the nation and around the globe for that matter. I wondered if Gary Schnitke had thought very much about what Carl was suggesting as it relates to economies of size and farms and whether there was anything within FBFM records at the University of Illinois as it relates to this. And when I talked to him earlier today, I asked him that question.
Carl is right. There haven't been any formal studies of economy size on grain farms. We do have that data in FBFM. When we look at the data, there are economies of size, and actually they are reached at a pretty small farm size of 1,500 acres. Most importantly, we don't find that costs go up. So if you get a larger farm, you know, if you can maintain that cost level, you're just simply making more money from that operation. So there's always an incentive to increase farm size. But it's, you know, to stop that, you would have to see costs go up with larger farms.
We'll hear more from Gary Schnitke, not on this subject, but on corn versus soybeans and the potential switch that can still happen in this state. We'll do that tomorrow here on the Closing Market Report. Now let's check the weather forecast with Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and sent us this report earlier in the day.
As you'd expect, in the middle of April, a pretty active weather pattern. Everything but the kitchen sink will occur across the United States as we go through the next 7 days. We've already had snow in parts of New England and the northeastern United States. There's likely going to be some strong to severe thunderstorms over portions of the southern plains and some areas of rain and thunderstorms moving into the Corn Belt mid to late in the week. And yet another, this will be the third major snow event for portions of the Dakotas, portions of Montana, and far northern areas of Wyoming as we work our way into this weekend. North Dakota could be hit with another major winter storm in the Pacific Northwest and the Sierra Nevada of California, picking up some really good moisture over the last week, helping those dry areas as well as the snowpack in the northern and central areas of the United States. However, despite the very active weather, there's an area that is not going to be getting much precipitation that really, really needs it. The western half of Kansas, the eastern half of Colorado, and many areas of central and southwest Nebraska, those hard red winter wheat areas, as well as down into the Panhandle region, those areas will continue to suffer from windy, warm, and dry conditions as the storm systems that are coming across the United States are just not transecting those areas. So while it will be wet in many areas of the Corn Belt Midwest, as well as the Northern Plains and the far western areas of the United States, hard red winter wheat areas have another week here where precipitation will be skimpy. Although parts of eastern Nebraska, eastern Oklahoma, eastern Kansas, and eastern Texas will be able to pick up some needed rain.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.